south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, here's an email from Marlene. She says, "Dear Johnny, I couldn't help but notice when you told that story the other week about all the trouble people seem to be having when driving up to auto banks called autobancos in Latin America. And I have to report that here in Minneapolis, I've had on occasion trouble at the drive-up window too. That would be," and then she puts in quotes, "first world American drive-up banks. Not because the tellers are unresponsive or don't seem to know what they're doing. It's just that they don't seem to like their jobs. And I can tell you from first-hand experience, often they're just having a bad day. I would know because I used to be one of them. So I know some of them can be rude, discourteous, downright snippy. And the solution, well, you can just put up with it and try to get out as fast as you can, or try to be one of the first ones in the morning when the tellers are fresh and not actively hating their jobs yet. And of course, some customers who've been in bad traffic or whatever are in a bad mood themselves when they get there. So they do, on occasion, get snippy right back, which doesn't help things at all. But here's what I think is the universal solution. And believe me, it'll work in any country. I've tried it in the States, Canada, even in Mexico. The solution? Kill them with kindness. Now, hear me out. You know that when you go to certain establishments and restaurants and such, they give you a couple of mints or tiny candy bonbons when you leave, right? Well, I collect those in my car in the ashtray that never gets used. And when I pull up to a drive-up bank window, I drop a couple of those in the little tube as I shove in my passbook and ID, etc. And let me tell you, Johnny, you wouldn't believe how nice and quick and responsive they are to me after I do that. You ought to try sometime. In Minnesota here, it works wonders. And, you know, it's no skin off your nose at all, because what you're doing is you're just recycling what are really stale, cheap, throwaway candy bits and mints. Stuff that just collects and gets old and moldy. It's stuff that I'll never eat. So why not give it a try? It works. You're wondering, of course, how I came up with that oh-so-simple magic solution. Well, when I was an auto bank teller, I once had a client pack in about a dozen Famous Amos cookies into the tube. And I gave them out to all the other irritated tellers in our department. And it was a day I'll never forget because everyone was happy. For it must have been at least a half an hour. Love your show, Johnny, and keep sticking it to the bad guys. Minnesota Marlene. Now, there's a great idea. Wish I'd have thought of that. Kill them with kindness, huh? Or just kill them and skip the kindness. Thanks for that, Minnesota. But you gotta know, I've been getting emails of another kind from certain people who also had some testy times at those autobank drive-up tube stations in the States. In fact, one guy who signs his email, "No Last Name Jack," he says if it wasn't for all the cameras in the States, he'd definitely make a real deposit. Dead skunk, smoke bomb, cow pie, and tear out of the place like a madman. However, with all the cameras and such, he'd surely do some jail time. He knows that. However, if No Last Name Jack were down here in Latin America, he could easily pull that off because, well, this is Latin America, and if they do have cameras, half of them surely don't work. And even if they somehow got your mugshot, they probably wouldn't follow up on it anyway. Now remember, if you call the cops down here in Latin America, unless you're within a block or two of the police station, they certainly won't show up for a couple hours, and maybe not till the next day, if at all. Oh, and by the way, did I tell you here in Latin America, when driving down the road, you might notice there are an awful lot of cars and motorcycles that do not have license plates. Or they do have plates, but they're so bent up, scarred, dirty, and mutilated that you couldn't read them with a microscope. So do cops pull them over then? Nope. Unless, of course, they get pulled over at a routine roadblock, then they might get a ticket for 10 or 20 bucks or a warning. But know this, you could be driving a car without any plates at all, and there could be a cop in a cruiser right behind you, and he just won't pull you over. Unless, of course, you're well on the gringo tourist trail, like Costa Rica, where the traffic cops just love gouging gringos. But you knew that already, right? In fact, at my Expat Insider seminars, I show a couple of PowerPoint slides of many such death traps on the road with no plates or no lights, no seat belts, missing bumpers, missing doors, broken windshields, even entirely missing windshields. However, one of my favorite shots is of four motorcycles parked in front of a police station in a central square in a medium-sized Latin town, and not one of those motorcycles, now again, they're parked in front of a cop shop, has a license plate. None. So again, the point is, once you get south of Mexico, the police are not overbearing sons of Hillary out to ruin your day. Because I'll tell you, if you could drive around in a big city, a city of millions of people, for days, months, even years, with no headlights, taillights, license plates, or seatbelts, you've got to know that Big Brother, as we know it up in the States, just has not arrived and probably never will. But let's get back to the point, whatever that was. As far as difficulties at those drive-up bank auto teller windows, remember, it's not the person that's being difficult, it's the system. I mean, when they don't even have deposit or withdrawal slips on hand, you gotta know it's not the teller's fault. Of course, it's well known throughout Latin America, the service is terrible, but the people are extremely nice and pleasant. They're always polite. It's like Expat Eddie says, expect rotten customer service with a smile, which is also one of the main reasons gringos with businesses do so well down here. Why wouldn't they? We were all brought up in a cutthroat business environment in the States, and we know all about customer service and going that extra mile to keep that customer happy and coming back for more. Though now I understand the tables are turning and all good things must come to an end. I understand now that when you call up a customer service agent, chances are you'll be in the ever so capable hands of a Pakistani call center agent a half a world away. So then, you Bronx and Cleveland guys with your iPhone glitches, I hope that is working out nice for you. Anyway, I'm not just kidding when I say Latins are extremely nice and sincerely polite. If you're paying attention, here's something you'll see all the time. When you're in an elevator, as it stops on each floor and the door opens, you'll hear a pleasant chorus of buenos dias, buenas tardes, whatever. And that's the kind of politeness you get from people who don't even know each other. And you know, even 25 or so years ago when I lived in Chicago, if a lone guy was to get into an elevator and say something like that, people would start wondering about him. And perhaps in these hyper-PC days, if a guy did that every day, multiple days in a row, he might get reported and face psychological evaluation. Hey, don't laugh. My brother, who works up in Chicago, just told me that in the Cook County Sheriff's Department, government workers there can be reported for sexual harassment if they look at another worker in the eye. That is, if they gaze or stare at them for more than 10 seconds. Makes you wonder, one, who's counting, and two, who's running the asylum. God, am I glad I'm living in Latin America. And by the way, Expat Eddie, in between chain-smoking, $1.50 a pack Belmont cigarettes, and sucking down umbrella drinks, he on occasion comes up with some beautifully simple phrases and truths. For example, one day we were standing in line in a place called DCAM or Digicam, I can't remember. That's the Government Gun Registration Bureau. And by the way, throughout Latin America, except in Mexico, you know it's legal to own and carry a gun. You can even get a permit to carry concealed. Now, you have to be a resident to buy a gun, but there are ways around that, legal ways. For example, if you're a worker on contract to an SA corporation, in some cases the company can get a gun license. And also buy the gun or guns, because, you know, certain businesses require armed guards and such. In fact, even Pepsi and Coca-Cola and water delivery trucks have an armed guard with a shotgun riding shotgun. Not that a job like that is in any way dangerous, but it's just the custom down here. Everybody does it. And, get this, if you're a contract employee for a company that has a gun license, if in your employment contract you have some kind of security authorization, you can carry a gun, shotgun, whatever, at your place of employment, or while on business or doing rounds for your company, as with the guard with a shotgun in a Coca-Cola truck. Now, if you think about it, that opens up a lot of possibilities now, doesn't it? What happens if, for example, you don't have residency, therefore you can't go down to a gun shop and get a gun? But let's say you own an SA corporation, or you know someone that owns an SA corporation, or your lawyer owns an SA corporation. Of course he will, because that's part of what he does for a living, make SA corporations for people. Anyway, let's just say you get hired by an SA corporation, whether it's yours or not, and in your employment contract it says you do a number of things, including occasional security functions. Okay, there you go. Now you can carry a gun. Now you can't buy a gun, but your SA corporation can buy a gun for you. And on, and your lawyer knows all those particular maneuvers to make it legal. And yes, it is legal. Oh, and by the way, I've been asked many times by expats and gringos. In fact, I've been asked two or three times in the last month or two. And the question? What if you're not a resident, which means you can't legally buy a gun? Suppose someone were to buy a gun legally and give it to you as a gift, or maybe he just left it at your house, or perhaps you bought it but didn't have it registered in your name. It's still registered in the other guy's name. Because, well, you can't do that because you're not a resident. Yet, it could still remain in his name, right? Correct. So let's assume, for example, a Latin friend of yours gave you a gun for Christmas as a present. A gun registered in his name. Wow, what a nice friend, huh? So you keep that gun under your mattress or in your closet for protection. Now, the way laws are written in Latin America, again, except in Mexico, you can have a gun in your house, no matter if you're a resident or not, because you have a right to personal protection. Now, technically, it would be illegal for you to carry that gun outside of your property line, but as long as it's within your property limits, you have all the right in the world to have it there, as long as it's registered with someone. So then you might ask, well, how can that happen? How can you get a gun in your house that's registered? Who's going to buy a gun for you, register it in their name, and let you hold it as if it was yours? Well, I can't think of anyone who'd be dumb enough to do that, can you? Because, well, it's traced back to that person, right? Well, on second thought, I can think of someone who'll do that. Your lawyer. Your good old Latin lawyer. If you're on good terms with him, and you present that case to him or her, for example, you live way out in the boonies, and you're not a resident yet, and you like to have a shotgun for protection. Well, I know many a lawyer that would go out and buy a shotgun. You give him the money, of course, drive it over your house, and make a gift of it to you. Now, note we're just dreaming up some hypothetical situations here. Now, note also that your lawyer might just think you're a crazy gringo for coming down to Latin America when the American dream is exactly the place you've left. And note, too, that almost every Latin lawyer is really a gringo wannabe. All you have to do is ask him where his favorite place for a vacation is, and that would be Disneyland and or Miami, of course. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, most of us think that Mormons, Democrats, Republicans, and Scientologists are crazy, too. We don't try to convert them. There's no point. They're already brain dead, so it's a waste of time. So you're under no obligation to convert your lawyer to your way of thinking either. In fact, I've found trying to convert any Latin person in whatever socioeconomic class is pretty much an impossibility. And though while you're trying to explain how America's gone down the toilet since you were a kid, they'll smile, be kind, and ever so polite, but they're not getting the message. They just think you're a kind of a crazy gringo. Again, the good crazy, not the Hannibal Lecter crazy. Think about it. Why should they believe a gringo who's telling them just the opposite of what they're seeing every day on the media and the news and what they're hearing from all their legal and illegal relatives up in the States? I mean, think about it. If a Latin immigrant with a sixth grade education could make a living up in the States and still afford to send $100 a month back, who could honestly convince a person here in Latin America that the American dream doesn't exist? That's why even educated Latins like your lawyer won't believe it. I mean, when all their lives they've been told America is the land of milk and honey, not to mention they've never had a dot-com bubble, a real estate bubble, and QE. Well, that's something no Latin understands and most never heard of. They've never had a welfare system or a safety net. You get the idea. They just haven't lived through what we've lived through and seen. Again, I digress as usual. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Expat Eddie and I are standing in line at the DigiCam or whatever they call it, the Government Arms Registration Building in Salvador. The line's just barely chugging along and things are, well, moving at the speed of government. Yet everyone's extremely polite. Both the people in line who've been waiting for hours and the government workers attending them. And that's when expat Eddie had another one of his effusive moments of brilliant clarity. And he said, "You know what, Johnny? Doesn't it seem the poorer the country, the more seriously polite the locals are?" which threw Beebe because in those few words, he kind of said it all. Now, there's a theme for another useless sociology grant if I ever heard one. Oh, and I just remembered now another story expat Eddie told me while we were standing in that government line. He said around Christmas time, he was invited to a big house party. Turns out his girlfriend, his fiancé's uncle from up in the States, and his wife were coming down to visit family in Salvador for the Christmas holidays. They'd been up in the States in Texas, I believe it was Houston, many years, and they went there illegally, of course, but they've been legal for a few years now after getting in on an amnesty program. Anyway, this is the first time they'd been back to Salvador in something like 12 or 13 years. And so the folks back home who hadn't seen them in so long threw them a big welcome home party. Okay, nothing unusual about that. You know, hail the conquering hero because they'd been sending remises home all along. In fact, Eddie says, over the years with those remises, they built a nice middle-class American-style house in an upscale neighborhood in San Salvador, which was eventually going to be their retirement home. Hell, Eddie says they built it for like $35,000, and for sure in the States it would have cost them four times that. And that's exactly why they and so many other Latins up in the States build their retirement homes in their countries of origin. Why? Because they know they can live like kings on a Social Security check. So if Latins with sixth grade educations can sneak up to the States and work hard at menial jobs, get their residency, retire, and move back down to their home countries, if they've figured out that's the way to go, why can't regular Americans who'll be eating cat food on their Social Security checks figure that one out? It's beyond me. So anyway, like Eddie said, they came back kind of kings of the castle. And Eddie said he talked to the old guy for a while, asked him how things were going up in the States and all that. Because Eddie hasn't been back in something like 15 or 16 years. And if you remember, he'd lived in Texas himself. So when he meets someone from Texas, he always bonds with them and pumps them for information. As I sometimes do when I meet people from Chicago. Anyway, Eddie told me a couple weeks later after the party, Eddie was with his fiancé's family again, and his future suegra said, by the way, the word suegra means mother-in-law. She said her brother visiting from Texas was very happy to meet and talk to Eddie. Then she said to him, you know, he doesn't know any real gringos up there. In fact, she said, you're the first one he's ever spoken to for any length of time. She said, my brother and his wife don't get a chance to mix with gringos because they don't speak English. And they felt comfortable with you because you speak very good Spanish. Then Eddie looked at me and said, Johnny, do you get it? They've been up in the States, what, 15, 20 years now and they don't speak English? Then Eddie said, look, Johnny, I've been down here 16, 17 years now. I speak almost perfect Spanish. And so do you. And the fact is, you know, we can't help but speak good Spanish. We're off the gringo tourist trail and we're forced into it. Which is why when you're on the gringo tourist trail, such as Cancun, Panama, Costa Rica, you too can live there for 15 or 20 years and pick up just about enough Spanish to read the Taco Bell menu. So then why not a t-shirt to celebrate? I'm monolingual and proud of it. And as far as that Latin couple who lived up in Houston for 15 or so years, not having learned a lick of English. Well, you could say they relocated to a place in the U.S. that's on the Latin tourist trail. In other words, they landed in a place in the States where there were nothing but Spanish speakers. Why? Because at first, anyway, it's much less stress and the easy way out. Which is perhaps why 90, even 95% of gringos and expats end up on the gringo tourist trail. Because you'll hear people say it's so much easier to assimilate. But you won't be assimilating and getting along with the locals. You'll be assimilating and getting along with other gringos. So then what's my point? Well, if you don't get it by now, you never will. Now, kind of on the same theme, a lot of gringos who don't speak Spanish asked me to give them a kind of an estimate as to how many upscale Latins know what's really happening up in the States. In other words, how many Latins, certainly educated Latins, know about all those political lies? Do they know about the institutionalized corporate government fascism? Do they know the extent of the military-industrial complex and the trillion-dollar black budgets? Do they know about the GMOs and the mandatory vaccines and the ever-increasing autism levels? Do they know that over 20% of young kids in the States are on Ritalin or prescribed psychotropic drugs? Do they know that the average U.S. adult over 50 is on 6 prescription medications? And on and on and on. So then, how many intelligent, astute Latins are clued in on all that? Well, I'd estimate less than 1 in 1,000, and that would be generous. The fact is, I meet educated, high-end Latins all the time, and they have no idea they're in a gigantic real estate bubble here. Not to mention, nearly all educated Latins believe, get this, having an MBA degree will get you the key to the city, and in truth, all it'll get you is the key to the broom closet at Starbucks. And get this, upscale Latins say they'd love to invest in the U.S. stock market if they only knew how. And you know, every time I have one of my expat insider seminars, I learn that lesson over and over again, that it doesn't matter how upscale or educated a Latin person is, they just don't have a clue as to what's happening worldwide. Seems that Latins are endowed with perpetual optimism, which I suppose will be a comforting thing as they watch the rest of the first world get sucked into the toilet. And I see that over-the-top optimism when I hire translator ladies for my expat insider seminars. Now, since most of my ladies are 100% bilingual, that means that they go to the highest-end colleges and university in Latin America. They're from upscale families, generally. They have cars, which instantly puts them into a very high socioeconomic bracket, since only about 5% of adult Latins own cars. Anyway, I'm interviewing sort of the cream of the young college Latin crop. So, while interviewing said ladies, after I give them a general idea of what the people are like who come to my seminars, I always ask if they have any questions. And they do. For example, they'll ask, why do these successful gringos avoid things like Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp, and Google? The fact is, these college-educated, upscale young ladies have never heard anything like that before. And the big question is always, why do successful gringos up in the States want to come down here to live? Now remember, down here in Latin America, anyone making over $10,000 a year is considered a success story. To most Latins, that is. Why? Well, the average working adult makes around $3,500 to maybe $5,000 a year. Which brings up a sticky point for those who believe government statistics. So follow me on this one. If you go, for example, on Wikipedia to any Latin country, let's pick Panama. And you'll see the per capita income there is around $21,000 a year. So something's not right. If the average adult makes from $3,500 to $5,000 a year, where does that totally misleading $21,000 a year come from? Government statistics, of course. And there are a lot of sneaky ways governments come up with figures like that. For example, since Panama City is an international banking center, there are a disproportionate number of white-collar millionaires, which jacks up those per capita figures substantially. And of course, no one's counting the people that are off the books. And in Panama, that's anywhere from 20 to 25% of the entire working population, not paying taxes, not on any lists. No one's counting them at all. Vast majority of them making well under $300 a month. Now, that's not to say there aren't a hell of a lot of middle-class Panamanian families making around $20,000 a year. But remember, that's with all four or five family members chipping into the family pot, like middle-class American families did in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. So, bottom line, don't be misled by those per capita income numbers you see when you look up a country in Wikipedia or anywhere else that lists government statistics. Again, it's a place to start, but don't hang your hat on those numbers. They're almost always way too inflated. All right, where were we? Oh, yeah, we were talking about me interviewing translator ladies for my Latin Insider seminars and having some of them ask me in the interview, why in the world would successful gringos want to come down to Latin America and live here? Oh, and by the way, when I interview them, I always say, why don't you listen to a couple of my shows to get an idea what we talk about? But they don't. Remember, most of these ladies are 20-something college girls who don't want to hear the sky is falling in every Latin's favorite fantasy land. It would be like forcing those poor young girls to watch Kim Kardashian's butt explode on live TV, or worse yet, to announce that my jammies been swept away forever by a hurricane. Or that Disney World's been permanently closed after discovering that organs were being harvested in It's a Small, Small World. What a catastrophe. World-shattering events. That would be way too much for any Latin to handle. Anyway, who would believe it? And why almost no Latins I've ever met believe that the First World is making its last few spins around the toilet bowl. So then once you're down here, what are you supposed to do when virtually everyone, including the most educated Latins, believe the U.S. is the land of milk and honey? Or more precisely, the land of vitamin-fortified GMO milk and honey. Anyway, so as not to scare off the bilingual ladies I interview, I say something like this. I say, our seminar attendees are way above average and some of them are brilliant. Nearly all of them know well that the U.S. government and the economy has a fatal disease and it's going down the toilet. People that come to our seminars know they and everyone else are being monitored and put on government shit lists. Not to mention, more and more people are getting punished for their thoughts and actions. For example, it's becoming harder and harder to travel, and more people are getting hassled endlessly at airports. And that's some of the milder stuff. I tell them, don't think this is some kind of paranoia either. It's happening right now. But you'll only read or see it in the alternative news, not on cable TV or in normal media channels, which are all owned by just a few huge media conglomerates who are in bed with the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies, Monsanto, the too-big-to-fail banks, the U.S. Congress, and the defense contractors in the military-industrial complex. And as you can imagine, by then, I've got a wide-eyed young lady staring at me in total disbelief. And then I'll finish with a topper by saying something like, so that's why many highly intelligent U.S. people are making their plans and getting ready to leave. Meanwhile, uneducated, uninformed Latins are rushing the border to get into the States. So I have given variations on that little spiel to ladies I interview when they ask why successful gringos would give up that American dream and come down to live in Latin America. So does that little spiel convince anyone? No. You can't change anyone's mindset in 5 minutes. Yes, these young ladies would love to live in the States too. So bottom line, in the end, you could say all my loyal translator ladies are loyal to the cause, that is, the seminar cause, but they're not loyal to their own countries because their dream, like 99.9% of all Latins, is to go to the United States and live the life they see middle-class Anglo-Americans live, as depicted on U.S. cable TV, which is ubiquitous down here now. So, am I being too harsh? I'm certainly not on a crusade to convert anybody. Long ago, I gave up trying to convince Latins that the U.S. was going down the toilet. I guess you have to live there and be a frog in the boiling pot to see that. Oh, and another common question I get from ladies during that interview is this. What in the heck is an alternative media? Okay, we're towards the end now, so don't forget to go to www.thenewexpat.com and catch those John Galt blogs, and you'll see me there too. And do check out my YouTube channel. Just plug in Expat Files in the search box and see the pictures that go along with the audio. Do check it out and don't forget to subscribe. It's free.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.